Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and happy November. It is November 1st, and I just have to say that that is one step closer to the Christmas season. If you've been listening to my show, you know I am one of those people. I do already have my Christmas tree up. I know some of you have just canceled and discredited me over that, and I'm just confident enough to pray for you, really, to find that holiday spirit. No, I'm just kidding. But we are talking about Operation Christmas Child, and I have my four shoeboxes all packed and ready to deliver to church tonight. This is such a great way for you to equip the local church around the world. You can either partner with your church and get a shoebox, or you can DIY it. You can just go to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC to learn more about what to pack and how to find a drop-off location near you. So I encourage you to do that. Now, as we start the show, I just feel it on my heart to give a shout out to all the parents who are out there. Now, this is the hardest job I think that we'll ever do. And my husband's a rocket scientist, and he will tell you parenting is harder. Parenting is the most emotionally and physically challenging. And if you do it well, it just takes every bit of effort in your soul. And I don't know about you, but I do not have my children regularly standing around the house finding me saying, "Hey, Mom, you're doing a great job. I just want you to know, like, I see you balancing everything and just still keeping it all together, and just wanted to give you a thumbs up or a shout out." Like, that doesn't happen in my house very often, because that's the nature of kids. So if you are out there, you are a parent of a child of any age, I just want to tell you, you are doing a great job. You are a great parent. And you know how I know? Because you're listening to this show, and that shows that you care and you are investing your time and your resources into finding hope for healthy relationships in your family. You are a good mom. You are a good dad. Good job, everybody. So just wanted to give you that shout out because you're here. Now, my guest today, wow, have we got a treat for you. I have got Natalie Runyon. Now, Natalie is in demand. She is traveling all over, but she is here with us at American Family Radio for the next hour. So what a treat for us. She is the founder of Raised to Stay, a ministry for those serving in the local church. Natalie's a worship leader. She's a songwriter. As I said, she is a very sought-after speaker. She's married, she's a mom, and she is the author of the book, Raised to Stay, Persevering in Ministry When You Have a Million Reasons to Walk Away. And today we're going to be talking about the realities of church life and the fact that the church is not perfect, and how do we guard our kids through that. We're going to talk about dating and purity culture and all kinds of great stuff. So don't go away. Natalie, welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show.
Oh, thanks so much, Jessica. It's so good to be back with you.
I know. I'm so glad to have you back. If you want to go back and hear my first conversation with Natalie, you can listen to the podcast. That is there. We have had her as a guest not once, but twice. How blessed are we? So let's just dive right into it, Natalie. You know, I mean, it is no secret that the church is a controversial subject in public narrative today. We have, you know, even I'm thinking about the sexual abuse scandal that happened in the Catholic Church, and the split that's happening in the Methodist Church, and the abuse and the controversy in the Baptist Church. I mean, you can look at churches as a systematic level, and then you can look at church on a personal level, and it's not perfect. Are we honest there? Like, is that a fair assessment?
It's an absolute fair assessment, and one that we cannot continue to not talk about. We have to talk about what we are seeing. It's not been helpful to push things under the rug. And so I love that we are at a place in time, in culture, where we can sit down and have really hard conversations, but with a hope that there can be change and we can be part of the change.
Amen and amen. And that's one of the things that I love about your ministry, because you have a community, and your book is called Raised to Stay. You call your community stayers, which I love, because that is on the heart of every Christian parent. They want their kids to be raised in church and to stay in church. But the reality is, more than half of kids don't stay. They walk away, and those numbers are on the rise. So, Natalie, can you just share with us your story of how you made this community, how God shaped your heart and your ministry in this way?
Well, I grew up in a pastor's home, and so church has been my entire life. For 44 years, the church culture, the church people have been just like my biological family. And I grew up in parsonages, next door to churches, and so there is a very tender part of my heart that is dedicated to the church. It's also a really hard subject for me because I've been hurt by the church, not just as an adult, but I watched my parents get hurt. And when I was in high school, I got hurt. And so there seems to be a common theme that if you love the church, you're probably going to be hurt by the church. And when I was in my late 30s, early 40s, and this whole deconstruction movement just took off, I was watching my own friends not just leave the church, but they were leaving their faith. And it began to break my heart because I understood why. The church has not behaved. The church has not been a safe place. It has not protected us like it should. And so really Raise This Day came from my own grief of watching my friends leave their faith and asking God, how can we change this? How can we build this church again that is a place to extend scarlet ropes and not assign scarlet letters? And that's how it's all started.
Wow. And you have, and you tell this story so beautifully, so transparently in your book, and just really reflectively. And I think it makes it very easy to identify with it because you don't hold any bitterness, which I think is a really beautiful thing and probably has taken you a journey, you know, to be able to do, because hurt along that continuum is not, these kinds of healings don't happen overnight, you know. But I do want to, I want you to share something that you shared on our previous podcast about a healing experience that you had in that full circle moment after a lot of time, a lot of work, a lot of healing had passed when you went back to that church that hurt you. Can you share that?
When I was 18 years old, which as we know is some of the most formative years of our life, is that late teen time, my family was really wounded by the church where we were pastoring. And we showed up one Sunday, we were told, this is it, you're done. Pack your bags, pack up your house. And we had nowhere to go. We had no home. We had no jobs. It was just this, it was it. After, you know, 6-7 years of serving this church, loving these people, they had been my family, many of them, since I was a little girl who had come with us. I mean, it was just a nightmare. And we had to just pack up our things with no explanation, no plan, and move away from everything that we knew. And thankfully, some friends of ours had an apartment over a barn on their property. And we moved into that. It was the first time I saw my dad looking for a job. The first time I really heard my mom weep and get angry. And it changed my entire life because it took me out of my college pathway, which was to go to a Christian college. I literally denied that opportunity, went to a public university, and wrestled with my faith for 5 years there. And I began to really have to ask the Lord, you know, is this my faith or is this my parents' faith? And do I love the church or did I just love the church because my parents love the church? And it was on that journey, even into my 20s and 30s, that I had to wrestle with what happened to me at 18. And I think it's important for parents to know that it's really important for us to communicate with our kids, especially when they're 18, because these late teen years are really forming our idea of God and the church. And as I was going through counseling and I was seeking wise counsel and got back into church ministry, when I was 42, I had the opportunity to go back to that church. They called me. The new pastors had been in my youth group at the time that we had been dismissed. They're now pastoring the church. They call and say, Natalie, we're having this 100-year anniversary. We'd love for you to come lead worship. And so I really struggled with saying yes. In fact, I think I said no on the first phone call because I had healed and I didn't want to reopen old wounds. And the Lord really reminded me that I needed to go back to see what he wanted to finish there. So I reluctantly got on a plane, flew home to Cincinnati, got into that sanctuary, saw all the people that I had grown up with, all those who had been part of that day who hadn't defended us, hadn't stood up for us, hadn't protected me. And I got up there on that platform and led worship for the first time in 25, 27 years. And during the altar time, the pastor got up and introduced all of us. And he came to me and he said, "This is Natalie. Her dad was one of our favorite pastors to ever pastor this church." And the whole room kind of gasped for a little bit and looked in just to see if they could recognize me, to see the little girl that I had been in this now woman body. And they all began to clap, and they gave my dad, who wasn't there, but gave my father a standing ovation. And it was in that moment the Lord reminded me that what felt like an exile was actually an exodus, and that what the enemy had hoped I would see as rejection was an opportunity to get us out of somewhere so that we wouldn't be eaten alive. We wouldn't want to quit forever. And those people afterwards, they were hugging me and telling me to tell my parents hello and that they missed them. And, you know, "Your dad was my favorite hunting buddy, and your mom, tell her we miss her singing." And it was there that I got to see full circle reconciliation. And, you know, we moved back to Cincinnati in June, and my parents attend church there now. So it is a full circle, whole family, like, miracle.
Well, you cannot see me right now and my producer, Stephanie, but we are both sitting here with tissues, like, just crying, because that, I mean, Natalie, what a beautiful, beautiful story, and how gracious of the Lord to give you that moment. And I wanted my listeners to hear this, because you cannot compare where you are in your journey right now with someone else's journey where they are. You are at the end full circle moment of your journey, but there are a lot of people who are at the beginning, who are in the middle, who are in the hard parts. And this has been a theme on everyone we've talked to who's had a journey like this. It's not easy. It's not quick, but it is worth it. And there is hope to be found. I mean, oh gosh. Okay. It's a good thing we're not on video, because my mascara is trashed now. But you know, Natalie, now your story is, you know, you're a mom, and you are stewarding right now, as we all do as parents, our kids' experience with the church. And one of your quotes is, "Our children are our first ministry. They are our greatest kingdom legacy." And that is so important. You know, I think about that with my grandmother, because she, you know, never went to college, like, never had any what the world would call accomplishments. Like, she just loved to bake and to sew and to serve. Like, she just loved to love everybody, especially in the church. And her legacy was her grandkids. I mean, I think about some of my cousins who she would drive to go pick up every Sunday morning and then cook dinner for. And that legacy is living on way longer than any other worldly legacy can. But the truth is, we want our, as parents, we want our kids to be in church, but the church hurts us. Your kids know the church hurt you. It hurt your family. And how do you shepherd their hearts through that pain and just raise them to stay anyway, Natalie? How do we do that?
I think as parents, our greatest fear, and maybe I won't say our, I'll speak for myself. My greatest fear was that my children would encounter the same hurt as I had, not just in the church, but in school with raising daughters, that they might have the same eating disorders that I had or the same identity crisis that I had. And what I realized is that as I'm raising up this 11-year-old and 14-year-old, these two daughters, is that they are actually the most redeemed version of my teen self that I could have ever hoped for. And what I can't do is put on them what happened to me and make us all fearful that what happened to me is going to happen to them. And the beautiful part that I have experienced raising up my 11 and my 14-year-old is that they are so innocent when they walk into the house of God. And I want to give them the opportunity to make their own conclusions about who the church is, who Jesus is, and who God's people are. And so as we come into interesting situations in the church, we have very good dialogue and open conversation regarding what they've experienced, what they're seeing, what they're hearing. And we don't gaslight them. We don't say, well, that isn't going to be, you know, what happened to us, and it's not going to be what happened to you. We don't say it didn't happen, right? We listen to what they're saying. Right. We listen to how they're perceiving it without putting our own past on it.
Hold that thought, Natalie. Hold that thought. We're going to revisit that as soon as we come back.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, welcome back to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. We are so blessed to be talking today to Natalie Runyon. Natalie is the author of the book Raised to Stay, Persevering in Ministry When You Have a Million Reasons to Walk Away. And before the break, we were talking about Natalie's story, her own personal story of church hurt. And we started talking about navigating our kids through this. Now, Natalie has two preteen and a teenager. I've got three teens and a young adult. So listen, we have street cred here. We are in the trenches with you. And is there anything else that you wanted to say, Natalie? We were talking about how do we shepherd our kids' hearts, and you said some great stuff about not projecting our trauma onto them or making them fearful or afraid. Anything else to wrap up that thought?
You know, I think, too, at the end of the day, it really matters how our children hear us talking about church leadership in our home. And, you know, I believe in just making sure that they hear us speaking up about our leaders, being honoring in the larger household conversation, and then saving that honest conversation between you and your spouse, just to keep that pure heart in our kids who don't yet have the brain capability yet to process some of the big ideas that we're talking about when it comes to things we might be seeing in leadership in our churches.
I think that is so helpful because our kids' minds are like police scanners. We think that they're not paying attention to us, but they are constantly monitoring in the background. I mean, they're developmentally wired that way because that's how they gauge their safety. Like, are my parents getting along? Is everything cool here? Like, do I need to be worried about something? And they do really listen to those kinds of things that we're saying. And that is a really good reminder to have that balance of acknowledging unhealthy behaviors that you see, but also honoring in your speech and the way that you talk about it. Now, Natalie, sometimes, you know, teens go through stages where they don't want to go to church, or maybe they've been hurt by the church, or maybe, you know, they're afraid they'll be hurt by the church. And some parents are out there just fighting their kids every week. And they're wondering, like, am I doing more harm than good because we're having this fight every Sunday about going to church and I'm making them go? What is your advice about that?
It's hard because, I mean, we've learned from the 90s that the blanket parenting method and certainly the blanket youth group method that we use to treat all kids the same, make all kids do the same church stuff, it didn't work before, you know. And I, you and I being parents, we know there are seasons where our kids are just tired or they're having a tantrum or they're being stubborn. And we know the difference between when they really are struggling with something and when we need to lean in a little closer. And for me as a mom, I'm always asking myself, is this behavior, them not wanting to go to church, them not wanting to go to youth group, is it a 411 or is it a 911? And the difference is this. I need more information with a 411 to find out, is it hormonal? Is it relational? Is it that they just don't have an outfit that they feel pretty in? Is it that they didn't go to bed until late on Saturday night and they're just exhausted? If that's a 411, then I'm going to push a little bit more and try to remind them that I'm the parent, they're the child, and we go to church on Sunday mornings. But then there are those 911s where we as parents need to get our antennas up. Is there an unsafe leader that they don't want to be around? Is there something relationally that's happened that they haven't told us yet that happened between them and another youth group member? Is there a spirit? Is there some sort of a discernment that they're picking up on that we haven't picked up on that might be in that church? Because we know there's no junior Holy Spirit, so we need to lean in. And that's why asking our kids questions all the time is so important, because they won't just give us information on their own. And so I've learned just to really discern, am I dealing with a 411 or a 911 where I need to be the parent and enforce rules, or do I need to go into investigative mode and really find out where the heart is behind that?
That's a great framework for advice. And you know, Natalie, it reminds me of something that happened to me actually when I was about 12 years old. Now, I grew up in a family that didn't have a lot of money, and my mom made my clothes, and we didn't have very many clothes for church. You know, there was just like your church dress. Like, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was about 12, I was growing and I was developing, and I went to put on this church dress and it didn't fit. I couldn't zip it. I was absolutely mortified and humiliated, and I did not know how to convey that. And I remember my dad coming in and saying, like, why aren't you ready for church? So we're going to church. And I just said, I'm not going. I'm not going today. And it was so uncharacteristic of me. And, you know, I'll reserve the details of that just to say that it was not a positive interaction that ensued at all. And I don't think I ever said that that's what it was, you know? And so I think about how I wasn't going to volunteer that information. You would have had to really work hard to get me in a place where I felt safe to say that, you know, humiliating thing. So I love that, because you had written this on your social media actually after our last conversation, to say, asking yourself, I wonder what has been said, done, or not said or done to make them disengage. And I thought that was just such great advice. And I also love that you said, talked about not forcing them into discipleship or mentorship or friendship when they're not comfortable. And so if you talk through the things and they're just still resistant, like, how do we love them through that and balance, like, these are the rules of our house, but yet also I don't want church to be this negative, I'm dragging you here kind of experience?
For our family, it's really just been, you know, especially moving from Colorado to Kentucky in the last 3 months, we were searching for churches. We were looking for opportunities to get our kids engaged. And I remember when I was a junior in high school, I was not happy at the church where my dad was the pastor, the church that heard us. I was not happy. And I knew in my life that I was called to do something big, but the church that I was at, I just felt like they were always seeing me as the pastor's kid, always knocking me down, kind of making me feel like I was the problem. And I went to my dad one day and I said, Dad, you know, there's a church across the street from the high school where all of my friends go, and they're going on a missions trip, and I feel like that's the church that I want to go to. Would you mind if I started going to youth group there? And I remember my dad going to the board and telling them that I was going to start attending a different church than he pastored, which is very taboo. And he looked at the pastor's council and he said, I will bag groceries at Walmart before I let the church hurt my kids. And what I remember about that season is that it changed my life, because I saw my parents put the ball in my court and trust that I had discernment to know where I would thrive and grow best. And so for my oldest right now, we have given her options that if she would like to attend a different church or attend a different youth group on a Saturday night or on a Wednesday night when we're not in family service, that she is welcome to go to Young Life. She is welcome to try a different youth group. But when we go to church together on Sunday mornings. But anything else, she can have a choice in how she maybe navigates how her faith walk. And that's been a really interesting journey for us, because I feel like what that's done is it's let her take ownership of who Jesus is to her, what kind of faith community she's looking for, but also keeps us together as a family unit. And that's just been working for us recently as we too are just starting these teenage years.
Well, as a pediatric nurse practitioner, I can absolutely endorse that from a developmental perspective, because any time that you involve kids in their own decision-making, if they feel like they have some say, now we talked earlier on another program with psychologist Lorne Gaines about the phrase, because I said so, and, you know, just putting your foot down. And there are some things that you have to do that with, but there are a lot of other things where you can choose your battles. So I call this concept pediatric choices. I give my kids choices that I'm fine with either choice. Do they know that I'm fine with either choice? Not necessarily, but it still gives them some feeling of control. Now, this starts when they're little, like, would you like to wear the blue shirt or the red shirt, you know? And then going on, it's like, okay, well, we're going to church. Would you like to go to the youth group, or would you like to serve with the children today? And then just giving them some sort of autonomy, some sort of wiggle room, so that you are building bridges and it's not just this absolute power struggle, I think is so important. important. Now, one of the things that I want to dive in with you today about, Natalie, is purity culture. Now, when you and I were in the youth group, because we're about the same age, that was really prevalent. I mean, we're talking like true love weights and purity rings and all of those kinds of things. What, and I kiss dating goodbye, which of course, you know, cultural firestorm, right? What have we learned from that as a church, and how can we do better?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I'm a product of True Love Weights. My dad gave me a ring. It wasn't weird. It wasn't creepy. It was very, I feel, holy between, you know, my dad and myself. I was treated in that environment. I don't believe like I was manipulated or anything. And so I did save myself and I did give my ring to my husband in our, you know, ring exchanges, and it was beautiful. And so for me, I can't say that I was abused by any of these or that anything was done to harm me through these movements. But what I can say is that from an intellectual and emotional standpoint is that I lived a life of fear based off of these movements. That if I were to have sex before I was married, if I were to get pregnant, that I would be the black sheep or I would be assigned a scarlet letter based off of how these movements really pinpointed and almost like isolated certain sin, not just one, you know, not all sin, but certain ones. And so I think a lot of girls in particular grew up feeling like they were sinful if they wore certain things, or that God would not love them or see them as clean if they did certain things. And so everything was hidden. There was no open dialogue or open conversation. It felt like everything was just kind of pushed under the rug. And then you had those of us who had waited going to our wedding night and having no clue what was going on because nobody talked to us about anything because everything was off limits. And so I think the pendulum was so far on one side that a lot of people just thought, why even bother trying to meet this expectation? And now you've got the repercussions of a very extreme religious movement that I think a lot of Christians just took too far that has affected women now in their 40s, and they're just now talking about it. And so I think it's a wonderful conversation for us to have. And how do we protect our own children from feeling some of those things that we feel now?
Well, we really share a very similar experience because I had the same personal experience as you did, but I also was I really struggle even to use the word, was I harmed? I think I can say I was impacted. And I tell a story in my book, Behind Closed Doors, about my experience with that, because, I mean, we just did not talk about that. The standard was purity, but everything else, like in between there and marriage, was just a total mystery. Now, you have to remember, I went to nursing school when I was 18 years old. So I want you to picture me sitting in the back of this reproductive class, like trying to be invisible, because that's what I did in nursing school. And they start telling me all of these things. I was writing notes so fast, like I thought my pen was going to set fire to my page. And I'm looking around just in total shock. I mean, I was completely unprepared. And there was nothing inappropriate. They were just telling me the biological facts of the birds and the bees. And so I'm looking around the classroom, and what do I see but people sleeping? Like they're just bored out of their minds. And I'm thinking, do they know this? Like, do people know this stuff? Am I just a total weirdo? Like, what is going on here? So I'll tell you, Natalie, actually what I did was I went to Walmart like in the middle of the night because I wanted to go down that aisle to see if those things that they told me about in class were really real. So imagine my shock. Like here I'm seeing this between bath towels and dental floss, like trying to reconcile that this is not some seedy store with neon lights on the freeway. Like this is Walmart, you know? And I think that that was really hard for me. And it did also impact me with fear. I was really afraid, like, okay, well, where's the line, or what's too far, or how much is too far? And now today, for me as a pediatric nurse practitioner, I see kids in practice all the time who have those questions, and parents are just so uncomfortable, even still, talking about this. So how can we have that conversation? Because I think the common misconception here is that I don't want to talk to my kids about that. I don't want to give them any ideas. Listen, they have ideas and they're genuinely terrible. Okay. They're terrible ideas. So how can we reframe this for a biblical view, and what's the church's role in partnering with that, with the parents?
Well, first of all, somebody's talking to them about it. If you're not, I can guarantee you their friends are. And I've learned that just in having my child come home in fourth grade and tell me that kids were saying things or doing things that she wasn't sure what it meant. And so my first suggestion, number one, is we have to start talking to our kids about this as soon as we believe that they are emotionally and, you know, maturely prepared. So for my oldest, we started talking about this in third grade because she came home and she had questions. And, you know, my oldest ended up starting her period very young. And so we had to talk about it because I've got a 10-year-old now who is having to learn how to use tampons and use pads. And I didn't have to worry about that until I was 14. And so now I'm having to look at my daughter at a mom and daughter retreat because she starts her period. And we start talking about, do you understand now that this means that you could carry a child? And I'm telling my 10-year-old this, and my mind is whirling because I never imagined that I would have to be talking to my child about this at 10 years old. But I knew if I didn't, somebody would. And now my youngest one, she's different. You know, she hasn't started yet, and she is very innocent. And so our conversations right now are, did you think that boy was cute? What did it make your stomach flip? What does that feel like when you think that a boy is cute? And we're really talking about the more innocent things, and she's 11. So I think we have to engage in the conversation and not even rely on the church to have it, because honestly, I don't think the church is having it very well right now either, because they feel like it's so much between LGBTQ stuff and gender identity that they're not touching it with a 10-foot pole.
You know, I agree with that. And I think we probably just made some listeners uncomfortable with some of the words that we were using. Oh my goodness, we're talking about this. There's nothing. I mean, I talk about so many things, but nothing will make a parent squirm more than talking about their reproductive organs. We all have them. God made them, people. He did. And my kids will forever mock me for making a drawing on a napkin at Chili's. Yes, that's in my book. But when we come back, we're going to talk also about modesty culture. So that part is over. You can come back, all of you who are afraid, and turn the radio down. Come on back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, we are here today talking to Natalie Runyon, author of Raised to Stay, Persevering in Ministry When You Have a Million Reasons to Walk Away. Now, if you've been listening to my show for any period of time, you know that I'm a nurse and that I've given you fair warning that we are going to talk about difficult stuff and we are going to have real talk. Because let me tell you, your kids are talking to other people and getting information from places all over. The world is not waiting to give your kids information. This is the information age and digital overload. And the other thing is that your kids are not going to initiate conversation with you on these topics. So some of you listening before the break might have felt a little cringy, a little queasy, but these are really important facts of life. And I hope that you get from Natalie and I's conversation that it is possible to get to a place where you're comfortable discussing those. Now, there's still dignity. We are going to preserve worth and we are going to talk about these things in a respectful way. But these are real issues that our kids are dealing with. Their bodies are changing, their hormones are going crazy, and we need to initiate conversation there. So, Natalie, all right, we've got everybody back on board now. I think we have de-escalated any panic that anyone might have felt. But, you know, these are important things. And just as we were talking about purity culture, you know, I want to talk about modesty culture too, because I think that, you know, there are definitely two sides to this coin as well. Modesty is important, you know, I mean, it is a conversation that we have, but we can take it too far. And I think of a time where my daughter at church was really shamed for wearing leggings with a long shirt, but to the point where, like, she wouldn't wear leggings anymore. And I think if you cover up a broken heart with modest clothing, that's really just putting a Band-Aid on a bigger problem. So I know you have a story that you can share with us because you're right there with us as well.
Well, growing up, I wasn't allowed to wear two pieces. I wasn't allowed to wear shorts of a certain length. I mean, it was very much policed as a church kid, as a pastor's kid, church camp. And so I do believe that modesty is honoring our brothers. Modesty is honoring our bodies. There's a beauty to really making sure that we are honoring what God has given us. And I love that. But as women, as girls, we also love fashion. We love clothes. We love the new trends. And I think that for our teenage girls in particular, they're exploring and they're trying to figure out what looks good on me and what do I feel confident in. And we just went through homecoming season, which I don't know if you've ever gone homecoming shopping, you know, listeners, with your teenage daughter, but it can be the most stressful shopping trip because there's so many expectations. What are my friends wearing and what's popular and what's cool? And my sweet 14-year-old, you know, she is got an athletic build. She is just, you know, very confident in her stance. She is muscular. And so when we started looking at homecoming dresses, we knew that they were basically 2 feet of material and some sequins. And we were in the dressing room and we had about 50 options out there. And as we were trying them on, rather than me saying, nope, too short, nope, too low, nope, this, I would just ask her, how do you feel? Like, walk around in it. Like, bend down and tie your shoe. Like, reach up and grab for something. Do you feel like you can be the confident girl that I know you are in this dress? And it was hours. It was multiple trips. It was multiple try-ons, multiple returns. And we finally came upon this beautiful party dress that was good length, good up top. She wore it to homecoming, and all of these other sweet girls who could barely walk in their dresses and were pulling and tugging and adjusting. Annabelle was dancing. She was having a good time. People were complimenting her, and she came home that night so proud that she made a choice that she made that made her feel beautiful, but also confident and covered. And that was the first moment I've seen my daughter make a power move on her own. And I was so proud of her, but it took time, tears, and a lot of try-ons before we got to that place. And that's why we can't rush the process with them.
You know, it's so true. And I have had the same experience with my girls. And it is really difficult, you know, especially in those younger tween years where it's important, where developmentally they're wanting to look like their peers and be kind of a, you know, a synchronous group. And it can be really hard to be that one that's different. But kind of taking it in a different direction, it's funny because I'm sitting across from Stephanie, who is my producer, and she's a boy mom, so she doesn't have these issues. But they say it's not fair because the modesty culture is all directed toward the girls. And what about the boys? Like, the girls are told what kind of swimsuit they have to wear, how long their shorts have to be, you know, if they can wear a two-piece or not with a shirt over it or leggings. Or, I mean, there's all of these rules with girl clothes. But let's just be honest, like, a trend for boys right now is tight shorts, you know, and nobody says anything to them. And so I think it's important that we also include boys in this conversation and make sure that we are making sure that they are, you know, having standards, but that they also bear some of the responsibility. It's not all the girls' responsibility to make sure that they're not tempted. They also have to monitor their own hearts. And I think that can be a tough thing for youth groups to balance. What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I don't think it's just youth groups. I think it's the church in general. I mean, I travel and speak all over the world in churches, and women, we're policed constantly if we're wearing tank tops, if we're wearing low-cut shirts, if we're wearing tight pants, if we have a shirt long enough to cover the front of us. I mean, there are so many things even that I wear, and I wear very baggy, loose clothing, that some of the very first criticism I get is what I had on. Whereas men pastors or male speakers can wear the tight jeans and the shirts tucked in, and there's no standard for that. And so I think it's a greater conversation even than just with our teenagers. But why are women always the ones seemingly to be pointed out when there are still men who should probably stop wearing the medium pants on the platform? So, you know, I do think it's a greater conversation, and it's one that I don't have an answer for, but that we do need to steward well how we look at each other, how we perceive each other, where we let lust take us. And that's male and female both.
It's so true. And that makes me laugh because, yep, that's what I heard. Like, so let me get this straight. Girls can't wear leggings in church, but boys can wear jeggings. That's jean leggings for those of you who maybe are not following along. Why?
Man, I just want to tell you, it's not attractive. Like, let's go up a size. Let's just one more size, please.
See, okay, all right, we're having some real talk here. But you know what? On the other side of that, I think it's really important for us not to be legalistic, like, especially when we have kids who are coming in. We don't know where those kids have been, what their heart experience is, what their experience has been at church, and what their home life is like, and you know what their guidance is like. And Natalie, I have seen the church hurt so many people, and I have had patients crying in my office over something that was said to them at church about what they're wearing. And, you know, I have just come to believe that we have to care. If we're caring about them holistically, like, we got to fix their heart first. But they can't, if you go up to them and you just immediately start criticizing their clothes, that's going to be really difficult for them to even be able to hear anything of what you're saying when they automatically feel shame and rejection. I don't know. What do you think?
Absolutely. It's absolutely true. And this is why I always tell my kids, like, look, our behavior will always follow belief, not the other way around. It's not going to be belief following behavior, because if behavior modification is the goal, that's not kingdom. You know, Jesus went in and he preached the gospel first, and then hearts were changed. And it's the kindness of the Lord, the kindness of God, that leads us to repentance. And so I could go on and on about this, because I too am tired of watching people leave the church because they were criticized on their outfit, when the truth is they can't afford anything different. Or they weren't raised in church to know that you shouldn't wear that in church. And the fact that that's what we're choosing to die on as a hill really shows us the log and speck situation of the church right now, when there are things happening like spiritual abuse and sexual abuse and things happening from a leadership perspective, and all we can do is harp on what people are wearing. That really breaks my heart, because it tells us we're off mission.
It's so true. And it reminds me of the saying that rules without relationship leads to rebellion. And so in a church setting, in a youth group, if you have those rules that about dress, about what you're supposed to wear, yes, those are important. But without relationship, you know, and not in the context of a relationship, it can be really detrimental. So I think that we have to be very thoughtful about the way that we approach that. Well, Natalie, we are talking real here. Like, we are no filter. This is Jessica and Natalie Unfiltered today. And I want to change gears, because you had a great post recently on your Instagram. I feel like I went and got some popcorn and was just sitting and watching the comments go about green rooms. It made me laugh and it made me cry, but it made me think, because we have a lot of youth who participate in worship ministry. That's a really popular thing. Like, for, I know my son, you know, plays in a worship band, and I know that there's a lot of kids that do. When I sing in worship, I always am surrounded by teenagers who are either playing an instrument or helping to sing, which is fantastic. But I was just thinking about your perspective on the green rooms, and then I thought about youth growing up. So share the controversy, spill the tea, Natalie. What happened on that Instagram post?
I am just as surprised as everyone that the green room post blew up the way it did. And if you're not familiar with a church green room, it's basically the room where everybody goes that's on the platform between church services, during church services, that has food, snacks, couches. And some churches use them really well and others don't. But for me, my point in that post was, hey, if we're going to start deconstructing the church, let's deconstruct things that don't look like the original church, that don't look like the upper room, that don't look like the kind of church that Paul was speaking to. And it was more tongue-in-cheek, but it really uncovered an idol that I don't think I knew was hiding so deeply in our church culture. And it broke my heart to a point where I've been battling a lot of anxiety this week just based off of the DMs and responses that I've gotten from people, because it has been such a volatile conversation. And I was shocked, and I'm still shocked, that out of all the things I've written about, that's the one that people have chosen to really go after. And for our children in particular, for our teenagers, we are modeling to them every single day what is important. And when we say you're going to serve the church, when we say you're going to lead worship, you're going to be given an instrument, first of all, giving any child a platform is already a big risk because they're so young, they don't know what to do with all of that adrenaline that comes with having an audience. So we have to steward that. Then number two, we're trying to teach them that the last shall be first and the first shall be last, and that when we go to church, we're there to serve the people, not for the people to become our fans. And so the green room really kind of already shows this elitism of if you have a gift, if you are on a platform, you get a special room with a fancy couch and snacks and, you know, coffee, whereas all the rest of the poor little people and the other ministries are just going to have to fend for themselves. And so what I really am hoping that green rooms will be used for is for our teens to come in, be ministered to through prayer, praying for the service, praying for each other, and then they'll look forward to going out to the foyer between services and getting to know the people they serve. And the beauty of being a worship leader and a songwriter is getting to lead the people that you do life with and, you know, day in and day out. And if you're hiding in a green room, you can't know the people. So all I'm asking for is some balance. You know, I'm not asking for no green rooms. I'm just saying if we're going to have them, let's use them appropriately and make sure that our kids see that when you serve in the church, you're there to serve, not to be served.
Well, you're really, I mean, we're touching Pandora's box and we won't have time to dive into all of this, but it really goes into the culture of the church adopting worship as a performance rather than what you're saying. It's a serving the body of Christ, the people who you do life with, who you see, you are there to serve them, to usher in, you know, God's presence through worship and through your service. And so I just want to tell you, for the record, it really convicted me because I am a worship leader myself. And I thought, yeah, here I am sitting in the green room with coffee and, you know, just hanging out. And, oh, we had our little talk. Well, the children's minister is running around, you know, trying to take care of an emergency diaper situation. And, you know, all of those things right. that are much less glamorous. Like, how fair is that? And it really, really made me think because I thought, no, that's where our kids are. They're in the shadow of that. And we're modeling that to them, that there's some sort of hierarchy. And like I said, that just gets me on the whole soapbox of worship, how it should be congregational singing and not a concert every week. But I don't know, we just have about a minute left. Natalie, do you got any last words?
You know, I think for our children, the biggest piece of advice that I have growing up as a pastor's kid is let's teach our kids to love the people more than they love any position, more than they love any coffee, any amenities that a church may have, but get them involved with the people, have them greet, have them shake hands with people, have them hand out candy, have them rocking babies. Anything that gets them in front of the people of God will make them fall in love with the people of God. And even when the hurt comes, they will know that the risk was worth the reward because they stuck it out, they fell in love with people, but most of all, they fell in love with Jesus.
Amen, amen, and amen. Well, you've been listening to my conversation with Natalie Runyon. Get her book, Raised to Stay, Persevering in Ministry When You Have a Million Reasons to Walk Away. Join me tomorrow. I'll have Pastor Brian Haynes, and we are going to be talking about praying for the conflict that is going on in Israel and Gaza right now. So don't miss it. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.